Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and a special shout-out today to our 18,000th Twitter follower, Isaac Rausch, a weekend editor at the sports website Deadspin. Thanks, Isaac, for following the show, and thanks to all 18,062 of you now, I think the number is, for joining the conversation and building a community on air, online, and through social media. The race to 19,000 is on at Brian Lehrer. And now that we've had our fun watching the 12-12-12 concert for Sandy Relief, let's get serious again. Since the devastation wrought by Sandy more than 6 weeks ago, there's been a lot of talk about lessons learned and the state of the region's preparedness going forward. Late last month, Governor Cuomo announced the formation of three new commissions to recommend improvements and assess the state's readiness for future natural disasters. And we're happy to be joined now by the co-chair of one of those commissions. Our guest is Judith Roden. She's the president of the Rockefeller Foundation and the co-chair of the recently announced NYS 2100 Commission. Judith Roden, welcome to WNYC today.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be with you.
And I guess you don't have an opinion on why the Rolling Stones were given so little time last night and the Who was given so much?
I wouldn't dare.
Through your work with the Rockefeller Foundation, I know you've been leading, been a leading figure in the drive to prepare other countries for the possible devastating effects of climate change. What have you been doing?
Well, we actually began because of our work in New Orleans after Katrina, so it was very much onshore that really gave us the understanding that both in the U.S. and around the world, cities, regions, countries were woefully unprepared as climate change just continued to change. The impact of climate change appeared to be, the climate change that's already occurred, appeared to be much more threatening and much more significant in Africa and Southeast Asia than it was in the United States at the time, 7 or 8 years ago, that we really went through where we would work first. Many cities in Asia are going to experience enormous demographic increases, and many of those cities where the population will just explode are on climate-vulnerable coastlines or on river deltas. In Africa, it's really agriculture. Food insecurity is such a pressing problem in Africa, and you can see the climate change already occurring in ways that just threaten dramatically the food security for many people. We saw the challenge in the Sahel last year in terms of drought, but flooding is an equal problem. So that led us to do and build capacity in those areas first, knowledge that we can now bring back onshore because we've been on the ground building infrastructure, doing hydrology mapping, assessing vulnerability, and the transferability of that is very significant.
So do you think there are things that New York can learn as a more developed city in the industrial world from some of the climate change effects in less developed cities in Africa and Asia?
Yes, absolutely, because the principles are the same regardless of the geography. When you're talking about infrastructure, both hard and soft infrastructure, and the kind of planning and information systems and institutions that have to go around that infrastructure, you can think most effectively if you think in three buckets. There are many things you can prevent against natural and man-made disasters, and you need to focus on those preventive strategies. There are some things you can mitigate, and those are going to be important strategies as well. But increasingly, there's just an extraordinary number of things that you can neither predict with 100% certainty nor really prevent. And so you've got to focus on what we're calling resilience, and that means the ability to rebound more quickly, to recover more effectively from those shocks that simply are not as readily preventable or avoidable. And it's bringing this notion of building a more resilient 21st century infrastructure that our experience around the world has led us to suggest to New York as we think about our infrastructure rebuild.
So give us a concrete example of that. I know you're just launching the commission's study now, and you'll report back to the governor after some time, so you don't have the conclusions right now. But based on your experience, what What might you recommend that we implement with respect to making the city more resilient, or the state?
Well, let me say what our commission is charged with doing. We are not the commission charged with the direct recovery function or a lot of the preparation in terms of the immediate pre-emergency response when the responses are predictable. So ultimately, a resilience framework would include those as well, and I think the three commissions will be integrated in terms of their final recommendations. So,
right, and just so people know, the other two are the NYS Respond Commission and the NYS Ready Commission. You're the co-chair of the NYS 2100 Commission, so I'm sure everybody's head is spinning right now from the bureaucraties. But what does that mean you're going to wind up recommending, or
right.
in what
so,
area?
Or what we're focusing on at the request of the governor is transportation systems, energy systems, all of the land use and land use planning, insurance and insurance reforms, and then financing. How do we really think about this? And so our goal will be to protect and increase the efficiency of the existing transportation and energy and environmental and infrastructure systems. Secondly, to strengthen the institutional and the informational networks that serve our infrastructure and allow it to respond more quickly and more effectively from disaster. To, as I said, install and instill resiliency characteristics into these systems and identify long-term options for the use of both physical and natural protective systems. And we do this, Brian, in the context of really understanding that there are three elements that we need to be focusing on. There's the well-being, the human systems, people and their safety and security and their health. The second system is really our environment and our ecosystems, because they are so vulnerable to these storms and shocks. And third, and equally important, our economic systems. So you have to take a systems approach, and you have to take an integrated approach to these three systems in order to really plan the resilient infrastructure for the 21st century.
Are we going to have to move away from the shoreline, or what we now consider the shoreline, if high tide or storm surges are going to be blocks and blocks more inland than they have been in the past? Should we reconsider before we rebuild things right where they were?
Well, obviously, all of the three commissions are having that conversation, and I think you will see ultimately a set of recommendations that both understand the pros and cons of doing that and are able to identify some mitigants. So we have to do better on our shoreline in terms of soft infrastructure. So we saw the difference between the effect of the storm on the communities that had the high sand dunes in the Rockaways and those that didn't. The wetlands restoration, the marshes, the underwater barrier islands, these are very, very critical pieces of an infrastructure rebuild that are going to be necessary to stipulate and commit to before you can say yes or no about how close to shore you ought to be building. Because, again, these decisions cannot be taken one by one. They're not project by project. If you can't mitigate and produce this kind of wetlands restoration, then you're going to have to make a different decision about how close people should be than if you can.
Since you've done so much of your work consulting cities in Asia how to prepare for climate change, I'm curious, we've been talking on the show recently about the relationship between U.S. and China, because I just took a trip there. Do you think both countries' vulnerability to the effects of global warming present a new opportunity for cooperation rather than confrontation? Because the U.S. and China are frequently at odds over global warming policy.
I do. Remember that they are at odds around mitigation policy. That is, what further actions need to be taken to prevent future climate change. What is so compelling here, and the Chinese and America are completely vulnerable here to the same situation, which is we are talking about these as responses to the climate change that's already occurred. So no matter how much further mitigation we do, we are seeing sea level rise, ice cap melting, all of the things that, while there's denial among some communities, are pretty evident around the world, and the implications of those are evident. So much more chance for mutual understanding, sharing of ideas. We see that literally around the world. The Asian countries that we've worked in are ones that have even more vulnerability at the moment than China, and they are Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, India. Bangladesh, of course, is significantly vulnerable. So
they've been hit so hard.
So hard so many times. And, of course, the small island nations, which have the frontline vulnerability. But we're talking now, when I mentioned the countries I did, of places that have huge urban populations that are particularly at risk, as is the case in New York. And so there's a tremendous amount that we can learn from one another. And the work that we've been doing has always been to build a knowledge base and demonstration projects on the ground that cities around the world can use. So lots of potential for global collaboration around this resilience notion or adapting to the climate change that's already occurred.
And as I'm sure you know, this whole idea of resilience and adaptation rubs many environmentalists the wrong way. Not that we don't have to look at that on the state and local level now that we know that this era is here and things like Sandy can happen. But environmentalists say, look, if you focus all the energy on figuring out how to adapt to a climate-changed world, then you're going to feel like you don't have to put that much energy into policies to reduce emissions. Have you thought about that?
Well, of course, because we have a group of funders in the U.S. and globally who are focused and intensively and appropriately on the policies and practices that need to be advanced in order to prevent further climate change. We work very collaboratively with them, and I don't think it's an either-or, and it's really important for the public to understand that. I used, just as an example, climate-sensitive land use and planning, including what you would do on the coastline. There is no doubt that the kinds of resilience strategies that you would use for climate-sensitive land use, climate-sensitive urban planning, are dramatic mitigation strategies as well as resilience strategies. So in many of these, there is overlap. The only purpose of the additional focus on resilience and adaptation is it really focuses the mind on the fact that there honestly are some things we no longer can prevent. And so we have got to figure out how to rebound more quickly.
We've been talking to Judith Rodin. She's president of the Rockefeller Foundation and the co-chair now of Governor Cuomo's recently announced NYS 2100 commission to prepare the state for future Sandy-like events. Thank you very much, and I hope we can keep talking as your commission does its work and comes up with its recommendations.
I look forward to it, Brian. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.